This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of July the 8th, 2019. I'm Mason King. As we like to say, Indianapolis is the crossroads of America. Four major interstates run through it, making it strategic high ground for manufacturers, distributors, and logistics operations. Now, these folks perpetually need to staff their facilities, which is where Indianapolis-based Morales Group comes in. It's a staffing agency that provides workers. And here's an impressive stat. Since its founding in 2003, the company has placed more than 50,000 associates in temporary to permanent, and performance-based positions at manufacturing and light industrial companies throughout the Midwest. Today, Morales Group finds itself at the crossroads of several major questions in workforce development. Probably the biggest is how to provide workers that have the rapidly evolving skills that employers seek. Another is how to provide economic opportunity for immigrants, refugees, and other folks from diverse cultural backgrounds who might have trouble quickly assimilating into the workforce. That second question was essentially the foundational mission of Morales Group, which is owned and operated by a family with deep roots in Central Indiana's Hispanic community. It employs workers from dozens of countries and invests in the training required to get them up to speed and then advance in their careers. It now operates in several cities and in 2018 generated $125 million in revenue. We spoke with Seth Morales, the president and chief operating officer, about the company's growth while the family continues to fulfill its mission. Now, there are several reasons why Seth Morales, well, that name might sound familiar, and we'll get to the most obvious one pretty quickly. Seth crossed paths in college with one of Purdue University's most famous recent grads, and he ended up on the receiving end of Purdue football history. Here's our conversation. Seth, thanks so much for making time to speak with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Mason.
And I want to get something out of the way just for our listeners. If the name Seth Morales sounds familiar, you might remember it from this.
Second down and 10. Offensive line continues to do a great job. Wide open. Got him. Touchdown, Purdue. Seth Morales. Holy Toledo.
Okay, for those of you who aren't Purdue University fans, that was Drew Brees connecting with walk-on sophomore.
Yes.
Wide receiver.
That's right.
Seth Morales for the go-ahead touchdown against Ohio State in 2000. I'm not a Purdue guy. I'm really not even a football guy. But I think this is still known as the best catch in Purdue history.
I get that a lot. I hear that often. I'm fortunate to be a part of history and being a part of such a great team that went to the Rose Bowl and having a quarterback like Drew Brees. Just like it was a dream I couldn't have dreamt up. It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Now, besides beating Ohio State, what was significant about that touchdown?
It solidified our position in the Big Ten to be at the top. We had went on this terror run in October. We beat Ohio State, we beat Michigan, and we beat Wisconsin. And Ohio State was the last game of that last week in October. And they were ranked, I think, 7th or 8th, and we were kind of maybe 12th or 10th at that point. Mm-hmm. And so that was such a big opportunity for Purdue football. I mean, they go to the Rose Bowl every like 30 or 40 years. So it was a fantastic moment.
Are you from Indianapolis?
Yeah, born and raised, local kid, went to Lawrence Central High School. And my story is I went to Butler. I didn't have a lot of looks out of high school. I was kind of undersized and underappreciated. So I went to Butler, played for a year. I felt like it was kind of a prep school thing for me. Got my 1 year under my belt, and then I saw Purdue playing on TV against Kansas State. It was in the Alamo Bowl, and I was like, I can do that. I can go play up there. And so I took my chances. I walked on. My coach at Butler told me I'd never play at Purdue at all. He's like, you'd be lucky to play your final game of your fifth year of your senior year. He's like, it's not going to happen, Seth. And so turned out to work out.
It worked out pretty well.
Yeah, ended up starting 3 years, and the rest is history.
Right. Yeah, so you played until your senior season. You graduated in 2003. Now, did you want to play with the pros?
Yeah, you know, I had aspirations of playing professional football. I had an opportunity to work out with the Chicago Bears. But my senior year kind of fell a little flat. My sophomore and junior year, I had some really good momentum, led the team in touchdowns my junior year. So I was kind of riding high. And then I had a really crappy game at Notre Dame. And that just set the tone for the rest of my senior year. I split time with another freshman And I just kind of got in my head, and season kind of went downhill. And at that time, I was kind of done. Yeah. I was ready to go on.
Okay. Yeah. And what was your degree in?
So it's secondary education. I wanted to actually, you know, coach collegiate or professional football, and teaching, I think, kind of came along with that. I look back and I was kind of focused on football. It was more of my major. I wish I would have spent more time focused on an actual major that would have been applied later in my professional career. You know, 10 years later, I went back to get my MBA at Notre Dame, and that was an opportunity to really kind of like dig in and learn and kind of really kind of hone in on what I thought was important at that time.
Now, I know thanks to LinkedIn that your first job or first-ish job out of school actually was for RICO.
Yes.
Is that right?
So yes.
How did you go from secondary education to RICO?
Super unsexy. RICO was, you know, a sales B2B opportunity. I had two offers. I had an offer from Johnson & Johnson to be a drug rep, making $60,000 a year, stocking doctor's cabinets, and I was basically taking orders. Or I could be a sales rep on the street learning how to, you know, basically just try to sell. And I think my dad challenged me to take the road less traveled, the path that was a little bit more, I just think, more of a hard knocks. $22,000 base salary.
Oh.
It's pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was huge. So that, you know, I think coupled with learning for about a year and a half, that was great, I think, groundwork for helping me kind of transition over to Morales Group.
Well, and that's right. And then 2 years later, 2005,
yeah.
What happened there? Did your dad say, hey, I think you're ready. How would you like to join the family business?
Yeah, so when my dad started the company in 2003, they had just a couple of employees. And so I jumped on board in 2005 at the beginning, and I was employee number five. So I'm really proud about that because I think, you know, the team wasn't necessarily built out and defined. And so I was kind of a founding member. It was very like bootstrapped. It was just on a budget and we figured it out. I got out there and just hustled in the street and sold and got some momentum with building some new accounts.
How did that work though? Did he ask you or did you ask him?
So I was living at home working at RICO, and I remember my mom and dad were at the kitchen table and they were like, should we start this business? This was right when I started at RICO. And I was the one really spurring them. They'll tell the story. Like, it was me kicking them in the butt to really start the business. And so I had an aspirations of jumping on board. They just hadn't gotten started yet. And so I think the feeling was mutual. When I kind of got into about a year and a half at RICO, I was ready to kind of jump and help my dad out.
What in your mind was Morales Staffing?
Yeah, the mission, I think, was founded upon this premise of my dad really wanting to make a difference. And he was in corporate America for probably about 25, almost 30 years. And he was kind of burnt out on just kind of riding up the corporate ladder. And so he saw this need for providing a job to the Hispanic Latino community. Because a lot of times he would serve and support the Hispanic community. My dad was 100% Hispanic, and he wanted to give back, but he felt like providing a job was the real difference. So you couple that with my grandfather at the time was dying of cancer, and he really challenged my dad to make a difference. We've become a very globally diverse workforce today, but that was kind of how we got started. And that was, I think, kind of the premise of, hey, let's find a way to build a better future and bridge.
So the focus initially was on the Hispanic community.
Correct.
And as you mentioned now, it is much more globally diverse. What does that mean exactly?
Morales Group welcomes, you know, folks from all different nations and walks, you know, whether you're from a local urban community or you're somebody that has come over as an immigrant or a refugee. So we support all different types of nationalities and backgrounds, but it's been really cool to evolve and really kind of be an open arm. I kind of look at us as kind of the United Nations of staffing.
Fast forwarding to 2019, give me just a quick idea of the scope.
We have approaching $150 million in revenue, so sales are top end there. We have offices in Indiana, Kentucky, and North Carolina. We've got about 4,500 weekly team members that are temps or associates in the field. And then we also have about 150 corporate staff. And we mainly focus on, I call it blue collar light industrial staffing. So anything in distribution, logistics, manufacturing, 3PL, e-commerce, we staff a lot of those Amazon warehouses out there in the plain fields of the world in Indianapolis. So that's kind of the footprint, and we're growing. We've got a lot of momentum in Charlotte and Dallas now and in Louisville, Kentucky. So we're excited to just kind of build our mission out.
Now, I think that I understand how a staffing agency works.
Yeah.
But give me the really quick 101.
Yep. Employees work for us. They're a W-2 employee. They come in, they apply. They're a Morales Group associate. We pay them the wage that the employer asks. So if the employer says, hey, this employee is going to make $15 an hour, we will pay that employee $15 an hour. And then we typically charge a markup on top of that. And that markup goes as a bill rate to the customer. But a part of that markup helps pay for their workers' comp if they get injured, their taxes, state and federal unemployment.
Why do you specialize in, I forget the phrase that you use, but the manufacturing, warehousing, and logistics?
Yeah, I think we saw just an initial space when we started the company. A lot of Latinos sought out roles inside, you know, manufacturing plants or production roles, logistics facilities. They brought a mindset and a work ethic that was productive, and we wanted to basically just foster that. But, you know, Indiana and Indianapolis in general is a great market for distribution.
You mentioned a number, several thousand associates.
Yes.
Currently, what was that?
Yeah, 4,500 weekly associates.
Okay. Do you know how many nationalities that entails?
Oh, man. There's probably about 28 okay. different countries now represented. So you've got folks from the Middle East, you got folks from Africa, South America, Central America. Just, it's very global, Southeast Asia. So we've got a very diverse workforce population.
Are you only focusing on the diverse populations, or is there a chunk of employees who we just sort of identify as general American?
Yeah, we focus on both. And that's something that we've been very intentional about. So if you're local from a rural community, you know, we support the Anderson office. So obviously, you know, folks coming in from a local, maybe farming community into the Anderson area to work inside a manufacturing plant at Nestle, we support that. We support somebody who's local and urban here in the city of Indianapolis, and we bust them out, or we find a way to employ them into the different job parks throughout the city. So we're very open when it comes to just the workforce in general.
This is probably hard to define, but if we wanted to do a ratio or a percentage, the people who are, that sounds silly when I say this, but American, and the people who you've recruited from other cultures or other countries, what basically is the balance there?
Yeah, I'd say domestically, it's probably 50-50. So domestic is 50% of the workforce, and the other 50% is internationally based. They've either migrated, immigrated, or there's some sort of refugee that have come in from some sort of country of conflict.
How do you recruit from these populations?
We recruit in a number of different ways. I think probably two of our most, I think, creative ways outside the traditional staffing scope are we use digital media. So we've got recruiters that recruit on Facebook or over the internet. And then the other thing that I do that I think is really significant is we go out into the community and we have outreach managers that will partner with organizations. And so they'll have 12, 13, 14 different partnerships with a nonprofit, a veterans organization, a school, a church. And a lot of these centers of influences have people looking for employment. Not only do we try to recruit from those centers of influence, but we try to give time and serve these groups. And so it's mutually beneficial.
Hey, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
The IBJ podcast is sponsored by Krieg DeVault, a trusted and dynamic law firm representing a wide variety of local, regional, and national clients. Committed to each other and to every client, Krieg DeVault prides itself on integrity, professionalism, respect, and excellence. Financial institutions, global manufacturers, national healthcare providers, and successful organizations of all sizes and market focus rely on Krieg DeVault to create innovative and successful business solutions. Connect today at www.kriegdevault.com.
Okay, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Mason King. I'm with Seth Morales. And tell me if I have this right, COO and president.
Correct.
Of Morales Group. So we've been talking about going at it in the community and finding, I guess, what we consider to be underserved populations, refugees.
Correct.
It cannot be super easy to prepare some of them for the workforce.
Anytime you're working with a immigrant or refugee population, there's a language barrier. So we partner up with groups like Luna Language to have translation services or have a bilingual team lead in a group of 3 to 5. And so that helps kind of break down some of the barriers. Sometimes if they're deployed into a new workplace, there's instructions that need to be translated. So there's those barriers that I think we try to overcome with just translation and partners. I think there's some cultural differences, and so we try to have recruiters on staff that understand that one community might not want to work on a certain like specific time or certain type of job, and so they're sensitive to some of those nuances. And so we're intentional about making sure we clear the way as much as possible for getting over those hurdles. Yeah.
But that's a lot of interaction.
It is.
With the associate. It's not somebody walks in and says, hey, I'd like to work. I've worked here and here and here. And then you call them up on next Monday and they go somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a lot of investment.
Yeah. You know, I think a lot of agencies that we compete against truly look at a temporary associate as a transaction, somebody who's making an hourly wage and serving their customer. But at the end of the day, it's kind of a one way. They win. The associate gets a job, but they're not truly lifting them up. And so what we try to do, we feel at Morales Group, our mission statement is to build a better future. And so we're truly committed to trying to find a way to upskill, create language services programs, truly bring these wraparound services to empower this workforce and take them from any job to eventually a better job to a career. We call that ABC, any job, better job, career.
I mean, that's got to be a significant cost. If you didn't do that, you probably would be more profitable, or would you?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Is there, in the end, a benefit to the company of helping someone into a different career path, not a different career path, but being able to, you know, achieve a higher position?
Yeah, we think the economics work into our favor if you do upskill and lift up this workforce. On the front end, they're dollars out of your pocket. For example, we have a forklift training program where we're putting $150,000 of training costs into lifting up workers that are raising their hand and they want a better opportunity. But we think on the back end, there's a better pay rate for them. There's a better point for us to increase pricing or have better turnover. And that, in a turn, affects our bottom line. And so we think on the front end, there's some upfront costs, but on the back end, it's a win eventually. And, you know, in our business, staffing companies hate to lose a good employee eventually if they convert over and they hire full time. We cheer when that happens.
So do you get pushback from some employers? Do some of them say to you, you know, I really would prefer to have somebody whose first language is English?
Yeah, we definitely, you get that in the state of Indiana. I mean, we're not as globally diverse as maybe the coasts. And there's some challenges with just accepting diversity and accepting a globally diverse community. But we're slowly, I think, evolving over time. And for every like 10 that are open to it, you know, there's probably two that, you know, kind of say, let's hold off for now.
But it is kind of a sales job in its own way.
100%. Yeah. You definitely have to walk them through that. But we think, you know, if you take the time to be a consultant and work and roll up your sleeves, we think there's more value on the back end.
Tell me about, and I'm going to mispronounce this.
It's okay.
Axiom?
Yeah, Axiom Performance.
Axiom Performance Facility. What is that?
Yeah. So we have our own warehouse about a mile down the street from our corporate office on the west side. Got 60,000 square feet where we do a lot of value-added services. So we package, kit, assemble different products for our customers. No other agency does this. This is a way to provide kind of an alternative solution. If they're busy, their warehouse is full, their production line is backed up, they've got a certain project, it's not core, it's non-value-added. They want somebody else to do it. We'll raise our hand and help them out with that. So we do that inside that facility. And it's a great incubator for talent. So we have probably on average 350 to 400 associates running around inside that facility or around throughout the city. And we find some of our best talent through that that kind of incubator.
Well, I would assume that would be, in a sense, kind of a good training ground. I
mean,
especially for somebody who isn't maybe as familiar with just the way people do business, the way they interact with people in that kind of business environment.
Yeah.
You can walk them through it.
We definitely see some of our best talent come from kind of the ground floor. They become a production associate, then they turn into a team lead, then a supervisor, then eventually a project manager. And so they go from making $10 an hour or $12 an hour to eventually a $50,000 or $60,000 full-time salary.
So what's the biggest business challenge you're dealing with now as president of the Morales?
There's, I think, two. First, if you just think about the economy and just the given labor market, there's a huge talent shortage. And so unemployment is at 3%. You've got high demand. So high demand, low supply, and you've got 10,000 baby boomers retiring every day. So you've got this gap of talent leaving the market and you need to refill. And how do you upskill and take somebody who doesn't necessarily have that skill set and kind of get them qualified? So we see that as a big opportunity in the state of Indiana. I think Governor Holcomb released some numbers last year saying that there were over 100,000 open jobs in the state of Indiana alone. So that's one challenge that we have at Morales Group. That's more kind of macro trend. Mm-hmm. The second challenge is, as you grow as a company, as you scale up, when you go from 800,000 in sales to 150 million, you change and evolve, and we don't want to lose what has made us special. And so you need to become professionalized as a company, but at the same time, you want to keep what's made you special and hold on to that kind of inner core, your why, your purpose.
What tax are you taking?
We're intentional about engaging our culture and having a good pulse. There's different tools like Amplify, which you've probably heard of. It's an employee engagement tool that really kind of hones in on the heartbeat of the company and if you have trouble spots. But it's something that as you evolve, it's hard because you outgrow some of your talent.
And a question about the labor shortage. To my mind, it sounds like that's a great opportunity.
It's fantastic.
If people are dropping out of the workforce,
yes,
and your job is supply,
yes,
people for the workforce, that's good, right?
Absolutely. So the demand's there, right?
Yeah.
You got to be creative in how you find the talent, because a lot of the talent that's out there isn't necessarily the most reliable. And so how do you creatively source or find people who have character, who are hungry? We call it hungry, humble, and people smart. We're looking for those kind of basic core foundations. That's, I think, the biggest challenge for all employers is how do you kind of think outside the box, because recruiting has changed, you know, with technology and the current workforce, which is the labor market being so tight. It's a really unique challenge.
What have you taken from your football career and applied to your business career? And I think it's maybe even a little bit more question because you wanted to be a coach.
I feel like I coach every day. I'm coaching a team of 150 or 4,500. You know, I think some of the things that have transferred over is to stay humble and hungry. You know, I played on a team where Coach Tiller was old school, and he was very much kind of your classic throwback coach, like Lombardi, just get it done, but work hard and roll up your sleeves. And Drew Brees, the ultimate competitor, somebody that would outwork anyone in the room, but at the same time had the most talent as well. And so when you saw somebody kind of put in the hours in the film room or the weight room, that definitely, I think, transferred over to Morales Group. I was an undersized guy with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. And the same thing here. It's like we're this small mom and pop. We recruit immigrant, you know, labor as we were starting. It's like, no, we're not. We're a company with a huge heart, very humble, and we're going to try to serve and help people out, whether you're from another country or you're local. And so I think that mindset has definitely transferred over into having success here at the company.
Would your life have been any different had you not caught that ball?
Oh, yeah, it would have been totally different.
Would it really?
I do. I do think the notoriety, being clutch, just, you know, having the opportunity to speak. You know, Indy's a small community, and it's this, a big little city. And I think there's just a great – there's a lot of great networking opportunities. You know, we have a suite at Purdue football. We have an office up at Purdue. And so, you know, some of those things, yeah, I would have been fine. But I think there's some cool nuances that have happened post having that opportunity. It definitely changed, you know, my stance just in the local market.
Right on.
It helped.
Well, best of luck to you. Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
My thanks again to Seth Morales. Hey, before you get on with your week, I wanted to draw your attention to a few of the stories in this week's print edition of IBJ. We know that Susan Brooks has opted not to run again as U.S. Representative for Indiana's 5th District, but there's less clarity over how that will affect Indiana's influence in Washington. Leslie Weidenbender reports that seniority isn't nearly as big a deal in Congress as it used to be. Also in this week's issue, Sam Quinn examines how Chris Jensen, Noblesville's mayor-elect, plans to address the classic question of how to encourage growth without damaging the character of the area and overloading city services. And Susan Orr explores how Carmel-based Protective Insurance Corp plans to regain its footing after some leadership changes and a number of large court verdicts it was required to pay. You can check out all these stories in a copy of IBJ that you, of course, have delivered to your home or office, or at IBJ.com. And remember that for full and unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning business content, just hit the subscribe button. Hey, thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.